Hi.
Pink, pink, pink. Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Ken.
I'm just Ken.
How are ya?
Ken, good. You? Tired?
Good. Tired, but awake.
Toddler woke up at 4 in the morning.
Yours? Mine. You don't have... So yours still a toddler. Jesus.
Rounding to 3, I guess. I don't know when that ends. Is 2 at the end?
No, I don't know. That's definitely still, that counts in my book.
I guess he doesn't toddle so much anymore. He's very sure about his walking, so much so that he's a menace, you know? What's your sleeping at the office status?
I was at the office last night, yeah. Yeah. Just getting jobs ready for delivery run this morning. I'm going to take my big 7-year-old toddler to work with me. She's going to be my delivery assistant.
She stayed there with you? Or are you just going to
I'll pick her up on the way out. So yeah, I was up late packing orders. It was fun, actually. Had a nice evening. Put some tunes on, assembled some drawers, bundled some shelves. I'd kind of forgotten that the workshop has big speakers, and because I just don't use them.
I think about that sometimes too, myself.
Yeah, that's kind of nice when there were no machines running, so it was just like bundling and just like neat little assembly tasks to do at my new dispatch station. So it was all pretty pleasing.
I have to ask you if this seems to be a pattern and you don't want to hire somebody, but yet you kind of need more help and now you're suffering to do it yourself.
I'm glad you've observed that. I think
my partner trigger goes on, beep, 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 beep. This can't be good. You know, like if I was staying at the shop, I'd be like one night a month, I'd get away with that.
Oh, right. I see what you mean. Right, yeah. Well, I know Laura's working till like 1 a.m. in Rhino 7 days a week. So I can kind of,
I can
work as much as I want.
Yeah. That's true. I see.
No, it was awkward / entertaining yesterday because a gentleman who's been helping Laura with assembly of her sculpture commission, which is due in a week, so she's very much in crunch time. He's been hanging out with us, helping Laura for the last week or so, and he commented because he'd initially reached out to me asking for, you know, wanting to catch up and seeing if like, but I had any work. And I did my standard thing of like, hey, no, we don't have any positions at the moment, but like, come in, have a coffee, I'll show you the shop, we'll have a chat, which is what I tend to do to most.
That's how you hire people.
It's what I tend to do with most inquiries, just because I do genuinely like to put a face to the name, particularly if they're local to the area. You know, you might meet someone interesting and someone who might be a great lead as a worker further down the track. Anyways, did that. Laura was here the day he came in and they got chatting, and like Laura was like, do you need work? And so she's hired this guy, you know, in a temporary. But he was coming to her yesterday. I was like, Jim said he didn't need anybody, but then I see him on Instagram at 2 a.m. like getting stuff done. It's confusing, isn't it? I'm glad people are noticing, but I desperately don't want to hire anybody at the moment.
Even if it's part-time? Is that a thing?
I'm just so... I mean, yeah. No, just the whole idea just exhausts me. No discredit to anybody who wants to work for us, but I just...
Training or money or
training,
both,
or... onboarding, money, payroll, superannuation, work cover... Don't want it. And you know, okay. I have a history of enjoying employing people. I was thinking about it yesterday. I've been employing people for like probably 16 years or something. I get, you know, I find that rewarding, but right now I just in that burnt out phase, still downsides, I think. I don't know.
very.
Yeah, it's like a protectionism too. Like yeah. I do that kind of stuff too, where I'm like, you know, the slippery slope is hire another person. Hire another person. I don't know. I think I ask because if I was in your position, I would probably want somebody to challenge me and be like, well, it seems like you're, I don't know, just that the place you're at, the place that I guess I'm at to some degree behind your progress, it's just, unless yeah, it's no. truly like what is best for your family and yourself, like it feels like there's a tinge that it could be negative.
Totally. You no, know, I appreciate
if,
that.
If repeated.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, not to keep justifying my actions, but the other factor, which is easily sort of overlooked, is, you know, I've got all of my staff are permanent, so they all get paid, sick leave, annual leave, you know. So I've got one of my main production guys is in New Zealand on well-earned annual leave break, but I got to keep paying people.
I see.
Whether right. they're sick, yeah. sick or away. So it's not like having a gap in my team, you know. I pay people more for annual leave than they get, you know, because of loadings and stuff. They actually get more per hour for annual leave than regular earnings.
Loadings? What does that mean?
So we've got something called annual leave loading here. So it's like an uplift for salaries that are paid out for annual leave.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're reading. Yeah, the Americans like, what the hell is this?
It seems similar to like when you're describing like the whole like magical. We don't have to pay interest on any money we have in the bank. Just like, okay, sure, that sounds great. I'd love that.
Offset accounts,
whatever you call it, offsets. Yeah, that also seems magical.
Yeah, the magical land of offset accounts and leave loading. Yeah, welcome.
Anyway.
Okay. What's happening on your end, dude? Man. Justino?
A lot of consternation and analysis because we had about almost 40% less product sale revenue than our average months in June. May was like a record month because of the sale, but then June fell off a cliff. It felt like it really felt pretty. I mean, we all noticed it pretty heavily. It's just we had days where there weren't orders. We had days where there was like 1 to 2 orders, which is just like, I think I had Sidekick go through. I went through so many different chats with Claude, Gemini.
Yeah.
Google Analytics now has an AI tool built into it that you can like query, which is actually pretty helpful.
Okay.
I just kept trying to find, as you've probably done, it seems like I end up doing more often, like a reason why. We just had really killed our sales. Like our stuff out of stock is, did I really mess stuff up when I migrated the website? Which I do think was the cause for a big cause of why it slowed down. But all of my AI tools and research, I basically couldn't have done it a better way still, which sounds crazy. And I really don't think that's like self-aggrandizing. It's like, I was so careful and kept checking and checking that I was doing it the right way. And I told Google Search that the Google Search Console that I was migrating these pages, and it was like, all right, cool, all good. And it's all been up to exactly what it's supposed to be. And the final thinking that I have now is it's apparently takes 2 to 6 weeks in the best of cases for like Google Search to migrate and re-index your new site when you change domains.
I've heard this.
Which is brutal when you're in the middle of it, because it feels like everything's gone. There's no more business. Like we relied on this false front of like people show up and buy stuff on the internet and they find us some magical way, you know, like some reason they're ending up on our site. And then when it disappears after years and years and years, you're like, well, it just happened. Whoa. Why don't I have money in the bank? You know, it's like,
So do you think the domain switch could actually be part of the sales, or do you always see a slump off the back of your May sale period?
That was the third one. And last year, was we basically went back to a normal month of sales last year.
Okay.
So we have situations this year with, we always have weird economic forces happening because of our brilliant government. However, it just, it seems almost improbable that it wouldn't have been related. So I don't know. Definitely something to it, but I was like with Claude's help, I was going through like page after page that was important to sales and in traffic basically, and seeing, all right, what hasn't been reindexed, and like asking Google to reindex it. And we've seen the last, I don't know, 5 days or so, it's finally started to 3 days come back to something that feels more normal, where it's not like a whole day of no sales and you're just like, what the fuck? Like what? This is just so not normal for the last 18 months, 2 years. We did have some job shop work come in, which was, you know, I'm always thankful that I didn't just blanket turn that off and start saying no to everybody. So
yeah. Yeah. Do you still, I find I still get quite a lot of traffic for like my CNC page. I've been tempted to turn it off a few times. And then whenever I'm doing like Search Console analytics stuff, it's always like, are you getting a lot of hits through your CNC? I wonder if any of that's converting to product. Probably not.
Right.
Or maybe it helps with the general search presence, having that sort of high-performing page in there. I don't know.
Yeah, which is a big reason I was concerned for exactly what happened. And I'm seeing now the traffic start to slowly convert. And it's going to take, it'll take another, as long as we've had the business open as PortlandCNC.com, it's going to take that amount of time, 8 more years before the internet probably unloads itself of those links. And, you know, it's redirected, but I'm just saying, like, there's so many reasons why those links exist on other websites, whether we've put them there or some crawler is like, oh, here's some, you know, digital download files you can get for a CNC, and they post our pages there, and it sits there forever. Like, it just never gets changed. And so that traffic keeps coming in, or like Pinterest links and just weird stuff, you know, that once you make a thing on the internet, it lasts forever, right? It never goes away. So I kind of second guess changing the domain, but also it should be fine. We should have been a one-time dip, and we'll move forward and won't be.
Yep. Fingers crossed.
The end of the world.
Yeah.
it feels pretty terrible though. When.
Yeah. No, just, it's horrible. Know, horrible
exactly what we're talking about. You see the Friday distribution of Profit First, and it's just like a percentage of what it used, you know, what it normally is. And you're just like, what, why? You know, I keep second guessing everything.
Yeah.
So.
No fun. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What did I do?
What did I break? Yeah. And unfortunately, like, as little business owners, I find that my emotional state is just so closely linked to the bloody sales or bank balance that, you know, I see like night and day, like I see the shift in my mood from between like things going well and things are hard, and had the flow on effects that has in my life, in family and
right. Unfortunately,
it's just, the link is too bloody strong.
Yeah.
So it's hard. Yeah. So how are you, like, if things are quiet at work, you know, I see little things on Instagram, you're fiddling with OmniWall or whatever it's called, making sweet setups.
Yeah.
What's the go in the shop?
We're getting close to like, you know, it's definitely not done and tidied up, but it started off with painting that wall like 6 weeks ago now. It's been a long time. And then we extended painting the wall to a new section, which we'd always wanted to paint to. And so now we've put up all of our tool holder holders again. And this isn't like the main shop saber area. So that's looking really good. And we've finally kind of decided on a lot of positions of new, you know, like stuff that we really hadn't moved. Like you go next to the shop saber along that wall. There's stuff that had been there since I basically moved in. Like it had not moved. Like there was no reason for some of those cabinets to move. We moved some of that stuff and repositioned it. And it's feeling really nice, but it's taken, it's kind of like doing all the little stuff you do, and you've done this a bunch lately too, I suppose, in the last year or so, all the stuff that you've either thought about or you've built up over years and years and years, and just doing it all at once is like, it's kind of like moving in a certain way. Like so much had to be reconfigured and like reconsidered and get rid of this, get rid of that, we did add a little section of OmniWall. It's like there was like a Prime Day sale for four of those panels. So basically got a bunch of panels that had nothing to be put on them yet, so that they look a little sparse. And we've been printing some stuff to hold some tools and such on it, but kind of knew it was going to be dead for a while and just figure it out as we go.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird mixture of invigorating and exhausting doing that stuff. Like I was here late this week because there's another reason I've been staying here a lot. It's because of WorkSafe, because we had that WorkSafe inspection.
You have a deadline. You know,
a month ago. It was longer than that now, actually, probably 6 weeks ago. And, you know, we had three or four work orders that are all pretty minor stuff. Well, they felt minor at the time. I was like, cool, that's all very achievable. Fix some things on the forklift. That was the only one we outsourced. You know, there was the door interlock on the pencil sharpener, updated our material safety data sheet database because that was completely out of date. And the fourth one was some pallet racking things. And I've had a real time because apparently you're supposed to have your pallet racking audited every 12 months, which I didn't know, by like an external assessor that comes through. Just another way someone can take money off you. Anyway, we'd never had it done. So I was like, cool. Finds a local company that does pallet racking auditing. Found same company that services like our fork.
Bolted down or what?
Basically, yeah. So the same company that services our forklift was like, oh yeah, we've got a dude that does that. We'll put him in touch with you. And I just had real time communicating with this guy. Getting him here in the first place was hard. And then the day he came through, I was at a funeral. Last minute funeral, and so I didn't actually get to meet him and walk around with him, and Johnny and Laura chatted to him. Anyway, so it started off a bit difficult in terms of comms, and his report was just like this one page Excel with like green and red cells and weird numbering conventions, and so I didn't understand. Anyway, long story short, I've worked through a bunch of his things, and then initially he said we can't have single bays, so that's where you've just got like two uprights and beams. It's like,
okay,
you got to have multiples in a run for it to be structurally sound. You can't just have like what's called a single bay, which is just like one little rack on its own going
upright,
up.
Upright connectors.
Beam. Yeah.
Beams, yeah.
And anyway, it turns out you can do that, but you've got to have more bolts in the foot plates and blah, blah, blah. It's been like this whole process. Meanwhile, WorkSafe, who have been great to deal with, do you have a reputation for being hard asses if you miss deadlines? So I had the last of these work orders, or whatever they're called, looming this week, June 30, end of financial year. The pallet racking had to be done. So I was in trying to sort of finish that whilst also not having the answers I needed from this pallet racking assessing dude. He said, you need four bolts in the foot plate. And I like called and emailed a message saying, well, I don't, there's not four holes in my plate. So what do you want me to do? Do I modify it? Drill holes in it? I don't know if I'm allowed to modify it. No answers. So I just pushed on late into the night, and like it was already about 10 o'clock. And then I was reading his report. I was like, oh shit, I'd missed something. Like apparently pallet racking is directional and it's got a front and a back on the verticals. It's got like the bottom triangle that faces you has to face forward because it helps with forklift impact. And I'd missed that in the report, and it was already late. I was looking into this corner of the warehouse with this huge, like, just all this stuff that's been there for years and years and years.
God.
Plywood off carts.
Nightmare fuel.
Dusty old stuff that we don't need, but we hang on to.
Yep.
These two huge bays. I'll send you a photo. And I called Laura. I was like, I'm going to be here for a while longer because I've got to tear down both of these racks and rebuild them.
By yourself?
By myself. Tall? Yeah, they're 4.5 meters high. I just sent you a photo.
What? How do you do that by yourself?
Well, it's not safe. It's not safe. I'll tell you that. I'm a monkey and I'm happy climbing on stuff, but yeah, I can tell you it's not safe. Anyway, Laura's worried that I was doing this solo, late, tired, and so I was like, all right, I'll turn one of the robot cameras around and you can just have me on live stream. So you'll see me fall off the ladder at least. You can call emergency services.
Yep.
So I had like a little safety team buddy in the corner. She was working away at home. The
robot's like, you okay? Jim?
If only. Oh! If only. They're not sentient yet.
Just thinking about how useful that would be if you had, like, there's so many times that I'm at home and I've actually thought about trying to put a camera over top of, like, the shipping area, trying to figure out if I could, like, see if a product was physically in stock. But if you had a robot and you could just
go look at it. Wally. It reminds
me of
those.
You got it all fixed?
Yeah, I got it done. Somehow.
And we're going to cut all of that out of the podcast, right?
No, it's fine. When all the pallet racking got installed, like the first, when we built the new shed, it was just clean, empty thing. And we actually employed a company to come in and install like main wall of pallet racking. Those dudes were cowboys. Like,
they did it wrong.
No, they didn't do it wrong. I did it wrong, rearranging stuff later. Those guys were just like, no ladders, no lifting equipment. They just climb all over it. So I think I just watched them do that day and was like, oh, that's how you do it. Cool. Okay.
I had never put it up until we got some, like, one rack. And at the time we had somebody working here that had put some together, and so I just kind of went with that. I guess I'll finish one little small thing on,
please.
I don't have like a big thought yet on this like metal perforated panel, but I think because Saunders got Omniwall, it tipped me off to there being another type besides, there's this brand called Wall Control and one called Omniwall. And
which one have you got?
Wall Control is vertical slats on each panel. Sometimes they have pegboard holes. Omniwall has basically like a stencil looking square so that if you turn it either way, you can use it. You can reuse the panel if it's horizontal or vertical. And just some other stuff, like specifically that supposedly Wall Control, the pattern doesn't consistently go between panels, so like you'll be trying to like span across. They're only like 16 inches wide, so like 0.4 meters, 400 millimeters.
Yep.
And 400,000 millimeters, they just don't like pattern, so like if you have to get everything perfectly on one panel, and I was just like, that's stupid, I don't want that. So it kind of tipped me over into getting the Omniwall. And, you know, you pay a decent amount for, like, each little accessory. However, there's printable stuff, and we can also, like, just get some sheet metal stuff made that we want aside from that. So we've kind of done both. We have stuff on the shelf. And I like that it's, like, really clean and nice and looks good. And finally, like, what I wanted, especially by the UMC, which got me into it in the first place, was, like a place for everything so that I kept having everything just on the worktop and there was no other place around. And I'd go to like reach for a socket and be like, where do you go now? You know, like,
yeah.
So now there's a nice little place you can kind of put most things.
Pleasing.
Nice.
Very pleasing.
Yeah.
As you know, I've been doing similar stuff with my little dispatch spaceship thing.
Mm-hmm.
Workstation, shipping station. And yeah. I had that thing happen this week where, which I really struggle with, and this comes back to the employee conversation of like watching, putting a lot of effort into a new tool or a new, in this case, a new sort of environment for dispatch and shipping, and then observing one of my team just not using it and doing this the old thing of like getting the screws and walking around to another bench and doing it elsewhere. And to be fair, there was a lot going on, like Laura's sculptures being processed on the bench immediately adjacent to the shipping station, which will become part of the shipping station once that job's done in a couple of weeks. Uh-huh. But I was just sitting here like at my computer trying to concentrate on a quote or something, and I was just like stewing on it.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Anyway.
And like, how do you communicate it in a way that's like, not like I'm micromanaging you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's positive. And so I was like, no, get over yourself, Jim. Just go and have the conversation. As my old business coach would say, it's just a conversation. It's not negative. It's not positive. Oh. It's just a conversation.
Yeah,
sure. Sure. Anyway, I went and had a chat, and you know, it was to do with spatial concerns of like, someone else was working right there in the same little space. I got it. But we're chatting about, it was like, cool, okay, so that's not working for you now, but like, how do we make it work? Like, I want this to be a functional space for doing sub-assembly, like exactly what you're doing now, putting a drawer together, you've got everything with arm's reach, blah, blah, blah. And we're chatting about it, and you know, part of the issue is that this shipping station is not finished and it's still a work in progress, and so there's like two laptops and a coffee mug and a couple of clipboards and just that natural clutter that accumulates on any horizontal surface in my life.
Yep.
And we're talking about, I was like, right, yeah, like it's not the vision I had, because there's stuff on that surface. I was picturing like when we get this working, like it would be just like clear, uninterrupted, flexible horizontal surface. So you could do this sort of sub-assembly work there, and all the tools and fixings are on hand. And there's more work to be done. So, right. Yeah, like it was a good conversation. It was a good chat. But I find that it kind of reminded me of the old days of me just getting frustrated. And it's kind of like why I gave up on Lean completely for a long time, because I was just like, I was sick of trying to talk people around as to why it was a good idea.
It took me, I want to say, years. And, you know, Ricky's overlapped in some of those people since he's been here so long. But some people that just gave me somewhere between, like, they had experiences in the past where they didn't like Lean, how it was being used. Kind of like, you know, you can easily go to this, like, corporate, like, oh, they're just trying to make more money. The bosses are trying to make more money. And there's some of that for me, but a lot of it's like, I really take the true, seemingly like Japanese, like it's better for the people. Like you want this like personal, you know, it's nice that it works both ways. It works in a business efficiency sense. It works for usually like an economical sense of like, saving steps. Like Ricky literally said to me, he's pulling out stuff out of that big new cabinet, the big blue cabinet. And he was like, God, this is just so nice. He's like, I can just turn around, grab, no steps. And I was like, that's our new motto, no steps. You know, it's something that I'm always saying. And it's nice to like hear it like be a positive for him to be like, oh yeah, I see what you mean by no, we don't need to walk anywhere to do this. And I would always be talking about, well, if we change this versus, you know, on that end versus this end, then we take less steps. And it sounds like I'm OCD, you know, like,
yeah.
Are you counting your steps? How many steps was it? Not that we do that. It's just in a general sense.
Hmm. And that excites me, but I understand that doesn't excite everybody. And like I had an employee a long time ago who I should have fired, let go much sooner than I did.
Okay. It's like, hold and this, on.
No. Old days of butter in Melbourne. Now? And they were the kind of person who would have a real trouble with me talking, like, in that sense. Like, they would reject those concepts entirely of, like,
yep,
and come up with some smart-ass way of responding to the fact that I was talking about, you know. I never had this conversation. I'm projecting of how that conversation would have went around.
Right.
We're walking too much to pack an order. And part of me is still burnt by that relationship and that. And I think what I do now is if there's any little sense of that, I project that that sort of worst relationship that I had in that sense. And the pushback that I would have got from that person, I think I do a little bit of projection now. So if there's any sense of that from, you know, my team now, I just it puts me in that headspace of like, ugh. And I really struggle with it. So that, you know, I think it's mainly in my head and stuff that I'm dealing with.
Yeah, I've always had like a huge resistance to like this, like corporate, that's the word I always in my head, and like corporate, like systematic things of, you know, like if you have to follow something to a perfected state of like how the system works for the corporation, I'm always like, yeah, I don't want anything to do with that. And like, so I can get that from, and you know, also if somebody that isn't the boss or the owner walks into the situation and they don't know anything about it, they're, I would assume, almost always going to be like, well, what's this do for me? You know, like, this is extra work for me. Or like, I talked about this before. It's really takes a lot of effort, at least for me, to communicate these things in a way that's, I just always feel like I'm trying my best not to micromanage. And if you get into that state with that relationship with that person, you're fucked. Like, they're never coming back from, it's going to take a lot of work to come back from that, like, oh, Justin just doesn't like anything I do. No, it's never good enough, you know, if you get to that place, which luckily I think like one person who doesn't work here anymore, that was the relationship, and maybe that helped push me towards how it kind of works now. But there is something contagious about it once you get buy-in, I think. Even if it's, you change the wording, like if the language doesn't work, it's like between, you know, teammates, it's like, well, you know, if you just move that bench over, you don't have to walk as much, you'll be less tired at the end of the day, you know, like hopefully that's enough.
It's a slippery slope though, right? Because like, where's the line between some nice little lean manufacturing improvements and being a sort of extractionist tech bro who's just trying to like squeeze as much value out of a business as possible? Like, I understand that it is all ultimately, it's kind of all on the same spectrum somewhere. And so I struggle with that internally sometimes. Yep. Like, you know, what is my reasoning and justification for wanting something to be done more efficiently?
Yeah. I think I remember Andrew Hendry talking about this maybe on With Intolerance.
Oh, really?
Something I listened to him where he, you know, I think it was there because I think there was questions from the audience specifically related to lean and how do you get buy-in, and if you don't, I might have even put some questions in, I forget, related to that. Like, what happens if somebody doesn't buy in, doesn't believe in the concept and fights back about that situation? And I don't even think I remember what he said, but what I've internalized maybe from what he said and others and thinking about it is just like, at this point, I'm not going to say it drives our business, but it's like, it's important enough that you probably won't be here very long if you don't try to contribute to improvements and safe working and morale and all those things. To me, are kind of like the vibe. It's the vibe check of efficiency and care, that you can put the words lean on it if you want, but that's not really important to me, that it just helps label it sometimes.
Yeah.
You have something to call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The I've got something that I think we need to.
Okay.
We need to buy.
Oh.
We need these hands.
What the hell is
as
that?
I was imagining you. You seen these little hands on sticks? No. We need to get these so whenever somebody's like not using the shipping desk right and they're walking, you can walk over and be like tap, 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 tap. You haven't seen this on social media?
No.
There's all these like videos of people using these, like, I don't know if they're for kids or what, but they're like little plastic hands on sticks and people use them as like jokes to like point at stuff and like, it's funny, man. Funnier if you'd seen the memes, I guess.
No memes. I had not seen that meme. Oh, well.
Mini retractable classroom pointer stick for teachers with telescopic finger grip from multifunction pens. Anyway. You get some other stuff here.
Do I? Drunk text the podcast notes hotline.
Drunk text wall climbing 4 meter high pallet racks.
Now. Let's not go there.
Migrating away from cursor, whether that's
whether
that's gone as well as you did it.
Oh, I did it. I burnt the last of my cursor credits last night on this Obsidian build out that Johnny and I have been doing. I think I messaged you at the time. I have felt like I had Tourette's. I was just like, it's the most I've sworn at my computer in like ages. As I was trying to set up Claude code in a what felt like a familiar and functional way to try and kind of migrate my workflow from cursor to Claude code, because I don't want to be involved in any Elon-owned product. And I think I said to you in the text, like, it felt frustrating at the time of, like, why do I care? And you made a really good point, which we'll get to. But, like, the thing, anyway, I had a horrible time trying to, like, because I've been using Claude on and off for months, but it just hasn't been my main, it's been a sidekick. It hasn't been my main work environment.
Right.
And then,
for like, proper coding.
Proper, yeah. So I did my final
lookups and.
I did my like big cursor migration of all my skills and folder structure and blah, blah, blah. I moved across. And then Johnny just texted me some like one-liner in Discord about like a feature request for Mission Control, which is our ERP. And I was like, oh, well, I just got Claude set up, so this can be my first crack at it. And I stupidly dived into this feature request without asking Johnny for any clarification. But because it was sitting there, I was like, oh, let's just give this a go. And I had the most frustrating experience. I was almost ready to just like dump it all and go back to cursor, but I persisted. And at the end of that session, I realized that I could install Claude code in VS Code. And I quite like VS Code. Obviously, cursor was VS Code once, so it feels familiar. Anyway, installed the Claude code plugin in VS Code. And I was like, oh, I'm home. This looks familiar. I know how this works. I can save workspaces and have multiple windows open and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm happy now, basically. Like, I'm quite enjoying it. And yeah.
That's job good. Done.
And I had the last few days of my Ultra account with Cursor, which I've just tried to be, I tried to consume all my remaining Composer 2.5 credits on an Obsidian build out for the business. So basically I've migrated all of our work SOPs and process docs and all of that stuff out of Notion, put it in Obsidian, and it was an awful import mess of MD files from Notion. So
Cursor, like, they were like too stylized or like Notionified or something?
It was like migration on migration. So there's still like Airtable files in there from years ago when we moved from Airtable to Notion for our documentation. It's like 2000.
I'm curious how you're going to use Obsidian for this.
2000 MD files, which are now have a home on the work server. We're using a open source thing called Sync Thing, so that we kind of
heard of that.
Everything's in one location, but we can all be accessing it via Obsidian on our individual computers, and that should manage conflicts and overwrites and stuff. And yeah, so I just let Cursor loose on like rebuilding all these MD files, not changing content, but just like making sure indexes were right and tagging was right and making it into a functional knowledge base, basically.
Right.
So it looks pretty tidy this morning. Yeah.
I have so many questions. How do you... I've used Obsidian for quite a while.
Have you?
They've like notoriously been known to not be very good as a team tool. So I know that they've been working on it. I actually listened to a podcast of the creator of it being interviewed, and they're talking about how they're making some team-based improvements. I didn't know if they were out yet or
interesting.
Not. Interesting. So I'm curious how you plan to use it.
Part of the push came about yesterday because John mentioned how, like, because John and I are just like pushing software to GitHub like every single day of the week. Like, we're obsessed.
Wearing GitHub out.
And we're working together on stuff, and that's starting to get pretty confusing across multiple repos of things. And the more integrated and the more better are these tools get, the more they're talking to each other. Like John's machining workshop tools are talking to my ERP tools and blah, blah, blah. And it's getting quite confusing to manage. And it came up yesterday because John was talking about how he's using Obsidian just personally to manage his work. And he was like, I got an agent to just crawl our GitHub and just put in like, look at each repo and just make an MD file saying what it is and what it does and what it relates to. And he'd done one of those little Obsidian knowledge graph things, just showing the linkages between the repos. And he was like, this is actually, my agent's finding this really useful as a tool. When I'm making edits here, it knows how that relates to there. And so it's actually helping his Claude Code instance like work more effectively across multiple things. I was like, that's cool. I wish I had a copy of that. How do we share that? And he's like, well, I just send you the MD files. I was like, cool. But then as soon as one of us changes something, that sort of index becomes stale.
Yep.
I've already like got this whole Notion migration sitting on ice on the server, untouched, with the idea that this will become our work brain. How do we do that? And so I just left. I had the kids yesterday. I just left into it and said, hey, can you just set up this environment so we can all access it? Do whatever you need to do.
Yep.
And he set up the sync thing stuff. And then we'll add a Cloudflare tunnel to it or whatever that is so that we can access it when we're not on the work network. And but I think it's going to be good. I'm excited about it.
How do people, like, this is the thing though that I've never been like a prior user of it. I use it to like take notes and keep track of stuff personally, very sporadically. Yep. I'm kind of like one of those places that you and I have that just things go, and I maybe it's the place I write down the note. I don't know. And I don't know how, like, what the user interface would be to, especially somebody that doesn't do the editing. How do they view it? How are they viewing a document?
Okay, so the current plan is, I think I'll just, you know, the shipping station, for example. Oh, no, everyone's got their own computer that they use in the business. So I think everyone will just have Obsidian installed on their Mac, on their MacBook, and it's using the sync thing to the central source on the server.
Yep.
So you open Obsidian, you open the LB vault, and there's a clear like start here sort of index, and you just click in there and you can immediately hit search and look for what you're looking for, or you can
search
click
through
the app.
Okay,
into...
It's not like a front-end design.
Yeah, I mean, if the app proves to be really difficult, then we'll spin up a front-end for it. But at this stage, plan is to use the app.
Okay. Just curious. So, I'm not being critical. Yeah. I just was trying to figure out like how you would... I hadn't conceived of how you would do that. And I've looked into it in the past in periods and times when we were, you know, jumping between like fresh test to something else and where do we put SOPs and stuff like that. So I have up Gems, what looks like when you're setting up an Apple Watch, it looks like the identification thing. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
It does
like when you have that little spinning thing you scan with your phone. It's the, what do they call it? Basically a mind map of all of your documents and how they interrelate, which is kind of cool. That was always one of their like visual things about Obsidian that like I think draws people in. It's like a,
it does,
like a visual interest magnet for people that may be interested in it. It's like, oh, that's a cool little thing, but it's kind of useless.
So if you flip to the next image, you'll see like the immediate dashboard that you see when you open it as a staff member in terms of just right. those starting point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I want this to be frictionless and not like, oh my God, Gems changed at the location of our SOPs again. What the hell? What the hell, Jam?
All those QR codes are broken. Fuck.
Oh, I forgot about the QR codes. Oh, no. Anyway.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting.
That's that.
I'll be curious to see how it goes for you.
Hmm. My toe. Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. Stop. Amateur. What else have you been noodling with, Mr. Mayor?
I thought that was a, like a, Chem's got like a Burger King hat on in America. Been watching soccer.
I'll
Americans
bet.
Are just still doing great, which is shocking.
Really? Whoa.
Yeah, we won again last night, yesterday.
Jeez.
What else? I don't know. We've been working quite a bit on just a lot of internal process stuff and like improving the shop. And we've now won a few jobs. So we're actually getting into like, all right, we got to get back to making things other than it's like a weird thing about being a product based company is sometimes you make a lot of stuff and sometimes you don't make a lot of stuff. You know, it's like we haven't had to like produce things in house. So between shipping products and I mean, I launched one product, Cat 40 keyless drill chuck. Have you ever used
keyless drill chuck? The martini mixer. I saw that.
Yeah, right. I was trying to make some like images because I do this often where I don't have the product in hand. I'm at home.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to make some more marketing images. So I was like, well, I got the thing. Maybe I can get, you know, a nice, very accurate or basically realistic rendering from like an AI tool. And I asked it to lay the tool holder down and put a drill in it. And I sent it to Jem because I think I said, put it at an angle. And it literally took that and put the drill in the end of the drill chuck at an angle. And it looks like a martini mixer. Anyway.
Or a concrete vibrator, like just.
Yeah, right.
Need the bubbles taken out
just
of your concrete.
Get it anything useful, so I didn't use most of that. But so that was this week. I, you know, trying to get some of the products we've had not on the back burner. Like we have other work holding stuff that I'm about to honestly was just trying to figure out a name for it for the longest time. But this thing we've called the Fang Stop here is like a different version of the side of using like the fang clamps, but it's like the stop side.
Yeah,
we've kind of had a accessory for the bent steel versions that worked that way, but I always had this feeling like, oh, we should have a more dedicated version of that, and so that's what this is. And so I'm just trying to think of, sounds so silly now, but like what the actual name was for it. And because we already had this little kind of like trivial small piece called a stop that went underneath the fangs. And so we're like, well, what if we, you know, if we change the name? And it just kept getting punted every time like get close to like being done with it. Be like, something else comes up. And so we come back to it again and not get it finished. And I don't know. I suppose it's probably one of those problems of like when I drive 98% of the product development and I get distracted by things, then
yeah,
it's done.
I mean, just because I can poke the bear, where I know you've said in the past, like, product launches are great fuel for you to get new customers, new engagement, and sales.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's true for both of us. Where are you at with those new products that we haven't talked about here?
The important ones?
The important ones.
Well, the reason that I hired our shop coordinator, more or less. I haven't made a lot of progress, honestly, and it's been pretty frustrating. I've definitely got down on myself a few times about like how much I have neglected to finish those, what I perceive to be pretty valuable products.
Mm.
And some of it's for not knowing. Some of it's that it sounds silly too, but it's like made out of steel and it's like a work holding tool that needs some decent precision, made on a metal mill that I just need to spend the time to learn how to do right, I guess, and like be good at it. So I haven't prioritized it, basically.
Mm. I mean, they're good excuses, but they're still excuses, aren't
they? Sort of. Not for how long it's been.
The hard-ass business coach in me would be like, why are you faffing around with OmniWall? Get that R&D done.
I will say that other than the one by the UMC, I did just hand it to Ricky and go, here you go.
Awesome.
The one in the Shop Saber shop, I have not messed around with. But yeah, no, there's been a lot of... I was walking through the shop yesterday towards the end of the day, and I literally just said out loud to Ricky, I'm just procrastinating. What the fuck else am I doing? Like, oh, there's another thing I should not work on right now.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
But
another feeling.
No, I don't know. I don't have a good excuse. Cool. Next week, let's say every week I walk into the week and I do this thing where I'm like, this is the week I'm going to put this, you know, I'm going to get huge progress on this significant product that we're going to release. And then
I get it. All right. Oh, well. I'll leave you with that thought. I'll go and get this delivery run on the road.
Yeah, I should go too. I think we're gonna run out of... Oh, I got 2 minutes left on what I said this podcast was going to last on the shop board.
Okay, ring-a-ding-ding. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, man. Bye.
I move the sun 3 inches to the left. Now nobody comes. Now nobody's left. I did it by the book. I did it by the numbers. But the river went dry. And I'm starting to slumber. May was loud, June was a tune. The doorbell forgot its own tune. The internet never forgets, it just takes a vacation.